You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Today is Wednesday, January 24th, 2018, and I'm your host, Lucas Han. You can find me on Twitter at LucasJHan, and you can read my articles at ClipsNation.com, as well as on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. In today's episode, I want to tackle some of these trade rumors that we've heard circling around DeAndre Jordan in the last few days, and then look at the Clippers' two recent losses to the Utah Jazz and Minnesota Timberwolves. Then, at the very end of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about the All-Star selections, which the last of which were announced last night, and, you know, unfortunately, Lou Williams not making the All-Star team. So, first, dive right into it, talk about these DeAndre Jordan trade rumors, because this is the big story around the team right now. This has all the excitement and intrigue. It's what everyone's talking about, what everyone's interested in when it comes to the Clippers, because this is much bigger than the last game or the next game when we're talking about a star player, an all-NBA first team player, an all-star player, someone who's been with the Clippers for 10 seasons, potentially being traded away at the trade deadline this year. So, obviously, a lot of intrigue here. And what we've heard about mostly or most loudly is that the Cleveland Cavaliers are really interested in DeAndre Jordan, which makes sense that the Cleveland Cavaliers would be really interested in DeAndre Jordan, because DeAndre Jordan, as it would so happen, is very good and is a good defensive center. And what the Cavaliers need, kind of more than anything, is someone to do what Tristan Thompson used to do for them, but Tristan Thompson apparently is no longer capable of doing. Now, Cleveland needs a lot of things. The Cavaliers are a mess. They're totally falling apart. They're 3-7 in their last 10. They keep on letting teams score like 130 points. The chemistry is horrible. They're having in-house meetings where they're not getting along, all this stuff. So they literally might pull off like 3 or 4 multiplayer trades before the deadline to totally shake up their roster. But one of their targets is DeAndre Jordan. Again, it makes a lot of sense. The question becomes, what does Cleveland... Oh, and by the way, another one of their targets supposedly is Lou Williams, who, another guy where it makes a lot of sense that they'd be going after, you know, a veteran who the Clippers would maybe be willing to move for a draft pick. Not that the Clippers, I think, are looking to move Lou Williams, but just that that's the kind of player that Cleveland is going to try to go out and get at this deadline, where they can acquire a guy who could be a big help this season and give up someone who isn't much of a help, maybe a guy like Iman Shumpert, who isn't being a big contributor, but is, you know, could potentially help the Clippers more in the long term as being a part of the team for several years than Lou, who's a little bit older, and maybe give up, Cleveland giving up one of their own future draft picks. But I don't think that's necessarily likely. I just don't see a lot on Cleveland that intrigues me once you get out of LeBron James and Kevin Love. There's just not a lot of good stuff there. Tristan Thompson is bad, and he has a huge, huge contract, $16.5 million this year, $17.5 million next year, $18.5 million the year after that. That is a ton of money to commit to a guy who you don't really want, you know? And J.R. Smith, who's another name that's being thrown out, $13.8 million this year, $14.7 million next year, and then a partially guaranteed $15.7 million for year three. Just huge albatross contracts. Channing Frye, $7.4 million expiring isn't bad. It's not a bad contract, but he's not a player that is really attractive that you want to go out and get. And then even guys like Jay Crowder has been so bad for the Cavaliers this year that I'm not sure you want to commit 3 years of money to him. Isaiah Thomas seems to be really messing up the chemistry, and we know that he messes up the defense, you know, wherever he's going to go. So even though Isaiah is a really good player, it's just something that I think the current state of the Cavaliers kind of has you questioning everything that comes out of there. I'm not really sure that Isaiah Thomas has more trade value than Lou Williams right now, which is insane to say when you consider where these two guys were last summer in terms of Isaiah being traded for Kyrie Irving and Lou Williams being salary filler in the Chris Paul trade. So, kind of really hard to believe where we are with the Cavaliers right now, but there's not really anything on that roster that intrigues me or I think intrigues the Clippers. And for the most part, you actually have to be taking back something that is actively bad, like the Tristan Thompson or J.R. Smith contracts are not even just eh, they're bad. They hurt you to take on. The real thing that Cleveland has to offer is the Brooklyn Nets pick that they got from the Celtics in that Kyrie Irving trade. But the problem with that is that the Nets aren't even that bad. That pick has been kind of floating around the like 7 to 10 range this season, and I actually expect that it'll end up being lower, like either at 10 or maybe even very late lottery, because as we get towards the end of the season and teams start realizing that they have no hope of making the playoffs and maybe shutting guys down early for the season, playing their young guys more, whatever, Brooklyn doesn't have the same incentive to do that as a lot of other teams have, because other teams have their own draft pick, so they'll get a higher draft pick if they lose some games at the end of the year. Brooklyn's not in that boat, so that, you know, I don't think it's likely to happen. So I think that that pick ends up being low. Those contracts aren't worth it. I'm not really interested in anything Cleveland has to offer the Clippers for DJ or Lou, but there are other teams involved. Washington, Milwaukee, Portland, Toronto, Minnesota, all teams that like DJ and could get in the mix one way or another. And I know people are going to say, well, what would the trade be? What would the trade be? There's a lot of different options. There's a lot of players on those teams. It's hard to predict. Maybe we'll hear some more developed rumors in the coming weeks, and then we can take a better look at what some trades could actually look like. But I think one thing is clear. I don't think the Clippers are in a place right now where they are ready to, say, give up on this season and say, okay, we're going to move DJ for draft picks, Lou for draft picks, you know, tank the season, end up in the lottery ourselves, whatever. I just don't see them doing that with how resilient this group has been. I think, you know, you've got guys like Doc Rivers and Lawrence Frank and Jerry West in there, and they're going to want to ride this group out. But that doesn't mean they won't move DJ. It just means that they're going to look for at least something that could help them now. I do think probably going into the deadline, DJ is more likely to be traded than extended, and Lou Williams is more likely to be extended than traded. But of course, both of those could flip-flop. They could both end up extended. They could both end up traded. A lot of different things could happen. But that's just kind of where I'm feeling right now. I think the Clippers, no matter what they do, are going to do something that still leaves them in a position to try to make this playoff push this year. But I do think they want to also maybe set themselves up for something a little better long-term than giving a ton of money to an aging DeAndre Jordan. So I'm sure we'll talk about that more in the weeks to come. But now we're going to move on to talk about some recent Clippers results. But first, I want to remind you guys about the new t-shirt that we launched on Clips Nation last week in honor of Patrick Beverley's subtweet at Chris Paul, where after the Clippers beat the Rockets last week and Chris Paul led a group of Houston players into the Clippers locker room for some sort of dramatic post-game confrontation. And then Patrick Beverley tweeted after the game, after everything had happened, "It's a different culture in LA. No more soft shit here." Now, at Clip Station, we've launched a shirt that says "No More Soft Shit in LA." You can find the link to check it out and buy it on my Twitter, as well as at clipsnation.com. And remember, purchasing the shirt helps to support the blog as well as this podcast. Fantasy basketball fans, listen up. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play real live snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night and there's no management. Just set your lineup and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple of minutes, so you can join one right now. And the best part? You play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a game for everyone. No salary caps, and you play in a real-life snake draft just like you play with your friends in a season-long league. So come and join me on Draft today. You can download the app anytime. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes. Or play right from your computer on draft.com, whatever you want. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code LOCLIPPERS. That's right, play a real money game for free just by using my promo code LOCLIPPERS on your first deposit in Draft. Now, let's talk about the two recent Clippers losses to the Utah Jazz and the Minnesota Timberwolves. So, the first one, the Clippers lose to Utah on Saturday night. Utah's playing on the second night of back-to-back. The Clippers have 2 days of rest coming off of beating Denver last Wednesday. And this game, you felt like the Clippers were the ones on the second night of a back-to-back. It really did. And, you know, this isn't a super devastating game. Utah is in 10th place. The Clippers are in 9th place. But even after losing to the Jazz last weekend, here on Wednesday morning, Utah has 5 losses behind the Clippers. Utah seemingly pretty significantly out of the playoff race. So the head-to-head isn't something that hurts hugely. I mean, it could come back to bite them if Utah goes on a really hot run the second half of the season, but it doesn't hurt anywhere near as much as a head-to-head loss against, like, New Orleans or Portland or Denver would hurt. But a loss is still a loss. You know, it's a Western Conference playoff race. Every game matters right now. And combined with the loss that the Clippers had to Minnesota on Monday, they're now 500 again at 23-23. Their game tonight is a very tough one against the Boston Celtics, who are best in the Eastern Conference at 34-14, so certainly a tough game there. Could potentially put the Clippers back underneath 500, and the Clippers at 23-23 find themselves again on the outside looking in at the Western Conference, with Denver in 8th place at 24-23, Portland in 7th, 25-22, New Orleans in 6th, 25-21. So, you know, it's not a great place to be. That Jazz game is really one that the Clippers should have won, and it was just a miserable performance defensively for the Clippers. They were disengaged the whole night. Utah is a team that doesn't have really any transcendent offensive players. They lost Gordon Hayward, of course, and the big replacement that they had offensively was Ricky Rubio, who is not a guy who's going to go out and score the way that Gordon Hayward can. And then Rodney Hood didn't play in this game against the Clippers. So Utah is just left without a ton of offensive creation. Now, they have a bunch of capable guys. Joe Ingles, of course, is, you know, someone who I think is phenomenal. But they don't have a star who's going to come out and lift their offense. It wasn't Utah doing anything special that hurt that, you know, made them beat the Clippers or made the Clippers' defense suffer. It was just a lack of engagement. And the reason I say that is because you could play good defense and Utah could put up 70 points in the first half if Utah's hitting tough shots, making all of their threes, getting really hot, whatever. But a lot of it was just sound offense from Utah, making the extra pass, finding the open guy, you know, all that. And it was just enough, like, simple, solid was enough to have a transcendent offensive first half because the Clippers were just so disengaged. The Jazz, I think, in the third quarter, they made it to a 25-point lead. And you know, this is when a defense fails like that, it's a collective thing. It's everyone on the floor. But I think maybe more than anything, I was disappointed in this game with Lou and Blake, who are two guys who I think kind of should be in leadership roles. And even though Blake is an average defender at best, and Lou Williams is a below average defender, I don't think they're shortcoming. Like, I don't think the Clippers put Lou on Donovan Mitchell, and then when he doesn't stop Donovan, you blame the defensive struggles on Lou. But I think that if you're going to be playing team defense and someone else is going to be guarding Donovan Mitchell, Lou needs to be involved in the play. He needs to not be falling asleep, totally disengaged, not competing for defensive rebounds. Like, he needs to be involved. And it's the same thing for Blake. Blake can't be in help position and watch a guy drive past him because he doesn't want to make a play on the ball and, you know, risk getting a foul or take contact or whatever because one defensive possession isn't that important to him. And I think that's the attitude that we saw from both of those guys for a lot of the game. And it's contagious. And then the guy that you're asking to really go out there and stop Donovan Mitchell doesn't go at it with the same intensity. The game kind of started to turn around in the third quarter with a burst from Juwan Evans of energy guarding Donovan Mitchell, which I think really did help to turn the Clippers game around, but it ended up just being too little too late. They ended up losing by 12. They did get kind of close in the fourth quarter, but it never really made a game of it. Lou Williams started scoring more in the second half, came alive at least on the offensive end. He had 31 points. He actually had 10 steals, which is kind of remarkable for how bad of a defensive game he had. But I think in a weird way, he got the steals because he was playing bad defense, because he wasn't on a lot of plays involved in the play, and Utah was making such eager extra passes because their offense was flowing so well that sometimes because he wasn't in help position, he was in the passing lanes. But, you know, I don't mistake those 10 steals for good defense, especially in that early part of the game when the Clippers really let the game get away from themselves. And then we're seeing, you know, kind of a troublesome trend with Milos Teodosic defensively, where, again, we know Milos is not a guy who's going to be a good defender, but he's getting torched in a lot of matchups. And the Clippers seem content to either, like, let Milos suffer in these matchups in a way. I don't know why they aren't trying to do more to hide him or switch him. You know, at his size, at 6'5", you can put him on wings. You know, now you can't, not every team has a wing that makes that a suitable matchup. But for example, in the Minnesota game, like, you could have put him on Jelica instead of leaving him on Jeff Teague. So, you know, that, and now, you know, we'll talk about it. So let's get into this game that the Clippers lost to the Minnesota Timberwolves on Monday. First, though, I want to remind you guys that you can check out Locked On Jazz and Locked On Timberwolves for the opposing local perspectives on these matchups. So this loss by the Clippers to the Timberwolves was another disappointing one. I think, in a way, maybe a little more disappointing than the Utah one, even though the Utah one is a game that they should have won, whereas Minnesota is a game they should have lost. Minnesota's, you know, a pretty strong team even without Jimmy Butler. But I think it's just the sense that, you know, punching up is always a little more inspiring than punching down. And so against a team like Utah, a team beneath you, it's a team you should beat. But I think it's a lot easier to get excited about a head-to-head matchup with a team that's five losses ahead of you in the standings, although at the time of, I think the day of the game, they were only three losses ahead of the Clippers, compared to a team that's five losses beneath you in the standings. Because, to be honest, if the Utah Jazz pass the Clippers have bigger problems than their head-to-head matchups with the Utah Jazz, because that means the Clippers have totally fallen out of the playoff race. But, you know, there's that little inkling of hope, or at least maybe there was, with, you know, if the Clippers had taken care of business over the weekend, potentially could have been within three losses or two losses of the Minnesota Timberwolves, whereas now it's five, because the Clippers could have avoided two losses of their own, which would have them at 21 losses right now, and handed an extra loss to Minnesota in the process, which would have Minnesota at 19, which obviously significantly shrinks the gap in the playoff race. And then the Clippers had those two games they lost to Minnesota in December, each by 6 points, when they were super shorthanded in those as well. And so I think that's really like a big what if, like very close with a few of those matchups that would vault the Clippers into like the 5-6 conversation in the West, and really could drop Minnesota into the 4-5-6 conversation in the West. Whereas now it's really more of 3-4 between Minnesota and San Antonio, you know, at the moment, although obviously all this stuff can change with a lot of time left. But so it's disappointing. You know, the team, I didn't think, played as poorly as they did in Utah. Minnesota's a better team than Utah is. And, you know, the biggest success that Minnesota had offensively was through Andrew Wiggins, which there's not much the Clippers can do about that. They don't have a ton of different bodies to try on Wiggins, and he just was kind of making everything. He played 41 minutes. He had 40 points, 16 of 28 from the field, just a lot of isolation stuff, not really stuff that the Clippers have a player who can stop. You know, they don't have a Luke and Bamute anymore to go throw out there. And, you know, I don't think Doc really wanted to bring traps and start leaving other guys open, which may have been, you know, a smart move. Maybe if you leave the other guys open, they miss shots, but maybe you leave the other guys open and a manageable game where you're making Andrew Wiggins work hard on every possession, you know, can quickly get out of hand. So it's a tough choice for a coach to make. The other guy who was big for Minnesota was Jeff Teague, who had 30 points. He had 16 of 17 from the free throw line. Milos really, really struggled defensively in that matchup. I don't know why the Clippers stayed with it so much. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me that they stayed with Milos on Jeff Teague for so much of the game when Jeff Teague was just torching him. I think that was the matchup that really decided the game. Even though Milos played well offensively, 15 points, 6 assists, 3 of 6 from deep, finding guys, you know, and even more so than Milos' 6 assists, the whole offense opens up for everyone, and everyone is a more willing passer when Milos is on the floor. But just that defensive matchup hurt the Clippers so badly. I felt like they needed to be a little smarter about finding places to hide him instead of just having him get absolutely torched by Jeff Teague over and over again. The free throw disparity was huge in this one. Minnesota shot 39, the Clippers shot 22, and it was even further apart earlier in the game before it got a little bit closer at the end with the game out of hand. But that is pretty far down on my list of reasons why I think that the Clippers lost this game. I think that there's a lot of stuff that is within their control before they start worrying about the referees and all that, although they definitely did worry about the referees a little bit in this game. But, you know, they were still in the game late with everything that happened. They had a chance. Blake had two late turnovers in the last minute. A little before that, the Clippers had a possession where Milos took a really bad, hurried three-pointer. They had a possession where they get a stop, and then Lou Williams pulls up for, like, a 30-foot three-pointer in transition. That's basically four wasted possessions because it's two really bad shots, two stupid turnovers. So you threw away four of your possessions in the last couple minutes of the game. It's no wonder that you lost the game. Blake overall had a really great game, 32 points, 12 rebounds, 12 assists, amazing triple-double. Lou Williams, 20 points, 7 assists, 8 of 15 shooting. Although, even though he had an efficient night, I felt a little more strongly in this game than I have in the past that a little bit of what Lou was doing was forced in this game. He seemed to be, you know, forcing his hand on a few different possessions instead of letting the game come to him. Maybe, you know, because he didn't get the ball as much in this game, he had 15 attempts. He's normally been getting a little bit more than that, just trying to shoot it a little more aggressively when he does get a touch. But you know, that isn't good for Lou, and it isn't necessarily good for the team. So, you know, hopefully that's not something that we start seeing develop into a trend. Montrezl Harrell was amazing off the bench. He had 23 points and 6 rebounds on 8 of 13 shooting. But again, we saw that big hole in the middle where the Clippers really, really hurt, you know, not having DeAndre Jordan. I think they let up 20 offensive rebounds last Wednesday to Denver. They only allowed, I think, 11 offensive rebounds to Utah, which is 11 offensive rebounds is still a lot. But part of the problem was Utah was making all their shots because the Clippers were playing such bad defense. And then in this game against the Timberwolves, they allowed 18 offensive rebounds. Just too many back-breaking possessions where a good defensive stand is eliminated by an offensive rebound. And honestly, if the Clippers take care of the defensive glass, you know, this is an 8-point game. It was closer than that in the last couple minutes. This game very easily swings if the Clippers just get defensive rebounds. So, you know, you don't have to worry about the officiating. You don't have to worry, you know, Andrew Wiggins can get hot. The referees can make some bad calls, and there can be a big free throw disparity. But if the Clippers boxed out, you know, they win this game. So that's why I'm not super into the whole ref criticism for that game, even though, you know, it was something that everyone seemed to think was pretty egregiously bad. It just isn't. I think there are way, way more concerning things for the Clippers than, oh, they got screwed by the refs. And I think, you know, we've kind of seen in the last few games, if the Clippers do decide to move DeAndre, they need to get someone back at the center position for this season if they're serious about even pretending to make a playoff run or trying to stay competitive without DJ this season. Because long term, they're going to need someone else there. Montrezl Harrell, I think, is a great backup center, but Willie Reed is not your guy to anchor the starting defense, and Montrezl Harrell is not the guy to anchor the starting defense either. Montrez is a great backup. Willie is fine as your third string guy, but you need someone else to come in and be in the starting lineup at center if you move DJ. So I think that a serviceable starting center kind of has to be part of the package in a DJ deal. So getting past those kind of ugly losses, I want to close out today's show by just briefly talking about the All-Star selections that were announced last night. But first, I want to remind you guys that with the Super Bowl coming up, there is no better place to get your coverage for the big game than the Locked On Podcast Network. Make sure you check out Locked On Patriots and Locked On Eagles as we get ready for the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. So these All-Star selections, you know, are tough for Lou Williams to not make it in. I'm not surprised that he didn't make it in. Obviously it would have been great if he had. It would have been super fun, especially just because he has a little bit of this, like, underdog thing going for him with you know, not being a guy who would be considered for an All-Star spot in a normal year, but is having an All-Star caliber year. But when you look at the guards in the Western Conference, I think Lou Williams has played well enough for a case to be made for him to be on the All-Star team, which says a lot. But I think that the conference is so packed that you can also make a reasonable case for him to be left off. And that's what ended up happening, and I don't think it's surprising. Steph Curry and James Harden were the two starting guards. This is an obvious thing that was going to happen. And then Jimmy Butler and Russell Westbrook were the two bench guards. Again, obvious thing that was going to happen. Russell Westbrook is practically averaging a triple-double. He was an MVP last season, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Jimmy Butler has been the best player on this Timberwolves team that's at third place in the Western Conference. He's been great this season. He most certainly deserves to be there. And then three of the bench spots go to front court players, so Lou Williams isn't eligible for those spots. And it comes down to the two wild card spots. Both wild card spots went to guards. One went to Klay Thompson. One went to Damian Lillard. And, you know, it's right in that range where those are guys that Lou would have been competing with, you know, along with maybe Chris Paul. And yeah, I just don't think it's surprising that the bigger names made it. You know, there's probably someone out there, you know, who's voting, or some of the coaches are thinking that Blake Griffin is the star of the Clippers above Lou Williams, whereas Damian Lillard maybe is a little more uncontested with CJ McCollum next to him. And then Klay Thompson is Klay Thompson. Yeah, he's just not someone who you expect the coaches to leave off, even if he isn't, you know, he's not having some transcendent season because of who he plays with, but it makes sense for the Warriors to have a third All-Star. What didn't make sense for me was for Draymond Green to make it, averaging like 11 points a game or whatever. I mean, he's a good basketball player, but I don't think he's been All-Star or All-NBA good last season or this season. It just doesn't make sense to me. And then people say, oh, well, he's so good on defense. And that's true, but Tony Allen never made All-Star games or All-NBA teams. The reason that there's a separate All-Defense team, the NBA doesn't have All-Offense and All-Defense. The NBA has All-NBA and All-Defense, because individual defense is not as valuable in basketball as individual offense, because a dominant individual offensive player can make makes everyone around him better on offense and can carry a team's offense in the way that one defensive player can't carry a team's defense, because you need, you know, just the nature of it is that defense needs a little more of a system, a little more of a buy-in from all five guys on the court. Offensive brilliance from one guy can win a game. Defensive brilliance from one guy can't. You kind of need in order to be defensively brilliant, you need all five guys. So, you know, we just don't see defenders honored in the same way that we've seen star offensive players. So for Draymond Green to be averaging 11 points and then get these nods and people go, oh, well, he's a great defender, it's just not persuasive to me. I don't think he deserves it. Maybe if he wasn't playing with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson, he would have a bigger offensive output, because he's a very good and very skilled player. But I'm not persuaded for Golden State to have four All-Stars. With the numbers that Draymond is putting up, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think what's interesting is we talk about Lou Williams being snubbed, but Blake Griffin wasn't even like considered or talked about at any point in the process. Blake is having, you know, a good year. He missed a lot of games. The Clippers have played 46 games. Blake has played 30 of them. But we've been hearing Chris Paul as one of the popular snub names. Chris Paul's played 28 games. Blake Griffin's played 30. So it, you know, the Rockets have been better when Chris Paul has played in a pretty substantial way. So it makes sense for his name to be on the snub list. But, you know, Blake Griffin's played more games than him. So to say Blake Griffin shouldn't be considered because of the amount of games that he's missed doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's something that I think is kind of always inconsistently applied. People use it as a way to write off one guy, but then they don't write off another guy that's played, you know, a similar amount of games. It's a tough Western Conference for Lou. Lou definitely has had an All-Star caliber season. It's hard for me to say for certain that you can look at it in an unbiased way and say that he clearly should have made it over a guy like Russell Westbrook, Jimmy Butler, Klay Thompson, Damian Lillard, Steph Curry, or James Harden. You can make the case for him in the conversation with Lillard and Klay. And I think that says a lot for what Lou Williams has done this season. But it doesn't surprise me, especially, like I said, Chris Paul got left off. Paul George got left off in the front court. So, you know, it's tough out there. It's a crowded Western Conference. And even in the Eastern Conference, you know, Bradley Beal, John Wall are the guys who made it as guards in the wild card spots. Again, tough players, you know, if it wasn't split up by conference, tough guys to be competing with if you're Lou Williams. But again, guys who he's right up there with in production. So he really is having that caliber of year. He's having like a Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal kind of year, which is ridiculous that you would be getting that from Lou Williams at this stage in his career. No one would have expected that. So, you know, he's been tremendous. I think he's made his case on the floor to be in the running with the guys. Probably it was his name, value, and credibility that kept him out of the conversation. There normally is a couple injury replacement slots in the All-Star game. Maybe one will be in the Western Conference this year, but even then, I think probably the nod goes to Chris Paul or Paul George, who are the bigger names. They might go with a Clipper, Lou Williams, or Blake Griffin, because it's in Los Angeles and the NBA can pick whoever they want, and so maybe they want someone from the hometown team. But Chris Paul and Paul George are the big names. Paul George is from Bakersfield. We know that fans will show out to see Paul George if he's in, although fans are going to show out, and you know the All-Star game is going to sell out regardless. But you know, I think they might be considered for that, but I don't think it's necessarily a shoe-in that if Klay Thompson rolls his ankle, Lou Williams would get put in at that guard spot. I'm not optimistic about either of their chances, Lou or Blake, to end up playing that game, which is unfortunate. But like I said, it's really good guards in the Western Conference. We knew this all along. I don't think anyone is shocked that Lou Williams didn't make it. Although hopefully, he seemed a little peeved because of the kind of year he's had, and this is kind of a unique opportunity for him, as opposed to other guys who are in the conversation year in and year out. He's never been kind of at this caliber being considered for as a legitimate All-Star candidate. I'm sure he got votes from some people. So maybe this motivates him coming out in the second half of the season to really show that he belongs. Hopefully he has a second half of the season that is as good as the tear he's been on in the last month or so. That's going to do it. I'm going to wrap this episode up because we are way over time. That's it for today's episode of Locked On Clippers Podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at LucasJHan. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.